Welcome to Wormhole Waffles, a Stargate podcast. Welcome to Wormhole Waffles. I'm your host, Chelsea, and with me is my co-host, Arzu.
Hello.
Last week, we talked about Stargate SG-1 Season 5, Episodes 15 and 16, where we got to see a Gwold System Lords meeting. And today, we're going to be talking about Season 5, Episodes 17 and 18, Failsafe and the Warrior. Failsafe premiered on April 5th, 2002, was written by Joseph Malozzi and Paul Mully, and directed by Andy Makita. The Warrior premiered on April 12th, 2002, and was written by Christopher Judge and Peter DeLuise, and directed by Peter DeLuise. So we've got nefarious activity bought by all kinds of Gwolds today. Arzu, would you please summarize these episodes?
Yes. So Failsafe, they go up in a spaceship to relive the plot of Armageddon, but nobody dies, to essentially stop an asteroid from crashing into Earth using Gwold technology.
Yeah.
And the Warrior finally gives Tilk something to do. a group of Jaffa want to fight for freedom. There's a guy that seems to be saying all the right stuff, which in sci-fi means there's a problem.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
Yeah.
Okay, let's do our quote reveal. Last week I gave you the quote. You know, I'd like to take the opportunity to say that this is a very poorly designed bomb and we should say something to somebody when we get back. And your guess was that it's Jack speaking because it's the same energy as when he said that the Tok'ra never come by just to say hi. And that they're on a mission with a bomb and either Daniel or Sam has explained the risks of the bomb and what could go wrong and Jack wants to complain. And you're right.
That was pretty close.
That was pretty close.
I think in my head they had taken the bomb with them.
Well, I mean, technically, yeah.
Like, it was, like, their bomb.
Yeah.
But it wasn't.
I mean, no, they did take a bomb with them. They took a nuke with them.
Was it with the wires, though?
That was their bomb.
Right. I'm just thinking of something else. I thought I confused myself. It's fine. I was dead right. Just completely confused myself. It's fine. It's fine. Spaceships and bombs are not the same thing. Okay.
Back on track now.
Back on track. I'm like, it's their bomb. It's not their ship. Anyway.
Yeah. So we open this episode with this civilian observer who has spotted an asteroid and is trying to call it in and nobody's listening to him until finally they do. And I'm like, you know, I do like this acknowledgement of how sometimes stuff with the Gwold is happening in orbit and it's logical that somebody's going to notice.
Yeah.
You know?
What I want to know is when the government came, did they kill him?
That's why I was wondering.
Because we don't see him again. I thought like this was going to be like when I forgot his name, but the guy who's like, I'm an alien. And then
Mo Martin.
Martin. I thought it was going to be like Martin where they like come pick him up and then he like pops up throughout the episode. And then he just never came back. And I'm like, what did they do to him? And
Sam said that he was persuaded to keep quiet. I'm like, but how was he persuaded, Sam?
Permanently?
Like, we're the good guys, right?
I think the writers probably thought, oh, everybody will realize that we just meant they paid him off. But we're all like, did they kill him?
This is the U.S. military we're talking about. I mean,
I know. I think the writers thought we would take a more altruistic view of the U.S. military. But anyway, rest in peace, co-founder of the Astrological Society of God knows what, gone too soon, because you're certainly not still among the living.
Well, I feel like, okay, if we operate on the basis of he was just paid off, then he still probably continued to watch that asteroid get closer and closer, and like, it got real close, maybe, and then they disappeared.
Maybe they locked him up. Like, maybe he's in jail and he's just never coming out. Like, maximum security military prison.
Can you imagine spotting an asteroid, the military showing up and being like, yes, you're right, but here's some money. Don't say anything to anybody. But then for the next 12 days, you're watching it get closer and closer. Like, are they gonna do anything about it?
They just assign him like a guard to him permanently.
You know, at what point do you say, like, whatever, I'm going to blow past this NDA that I signed and tell the people I love that we're all going to die because this asteroid is still coming. You know what I mean? Like,
isn't there a movie like Don't Look Up where there's an asteroid coming to Earth and everybody's just like pretending that it's not there because they're not looking up? I mean, well, like metaphorically not looking up. Like, they're just acknowledging that, like, it's not actually as big a deal. Maybe that's what's going on.
Yeah, well, that's a satire about how effed up our society has become. So
I'm just saying, like, that's like, at what point do you say something? Like, well, at what point is the government going to admit, yeah, it's a problem? Never.
Right.
That asteroid's going to hit Earth. The Nakoda related reaction Sam mentioned is going to go off and they will burn to death saying that there's no problem.
Yep.
Anyway.
So anyway.
Anyway, pass the cold open now.
They have a suspicion that it's not a naturally occurring asteroid, but they would have to prove that in order for the Asgard to be able to help, and they can't prove it until they actually get there, which is going to take a while. So there is a cargo ship that they have access to on another planet, but it needs some maintenance, so they have to go fix it up and then fly it to Earth, which is going to take like precisely the amount of time that they have.
How convenient.
It's kind of like Star Wars in that way, that it takes them, the travel time through hyperspace takes as long as the plot needs it to take,
which is fine.
So yeah,
you know.
And so they go through the Stargate to go pick up the cargo ship and work on it, and I immediately have a problem because there's this engineer that's going to go with them to fix it up. And he very clearly does not want to go. And I'm like, I understand this is the military and people have orders, but I really don't like them literally pushing him through the Stargate against his will.
Agreed. And also, this is the military. There's a ton of people on base. If this engineer doesn't want to go, you can't tell me he's the only engineer that has his skill set.
I mean, I guess he could be because the Stargate is such like a limited project.
But then if you're in SGC, why are you there if you don't know how to do it? Like, what if something happens to him? Like, he gets sick or he's got or he's on leave and they need somebody to do that. Like, he can't be the only one.
Well, there was like three of them.
So if he doesn't want to go, like, he doesn't have to go. Also, maybe, would you, as a person in space travel, want somebody with you who did not want to be there?
Exactly.
Like,
I guess the reasoning was, like, we have three people who know how to work on this. We're going to get all three of them so it can go as fast as possible. Okay. I mean, I understand the reasoning, but, like, literally forcing him through, I really don't like that. Yeah. Consent is sexy.
Consent is so sexy. You know who would never do that is Jack O'Neill.
He's the one who pushed him through.
I don't care. I don't care. Actually, Jack's on my list a lot this week. More next time. But yeah.
He's a very white man in the next episode.
Yeah. Love of my life, Jack O'Neill, became a problematic king.
Yeah. We'll get to that.
That's fine.
But yeah, he and Sam just push this poor engineer to the Stargate, and I'm like,
this isn't like you guys.
Yeah, I mean, go ahead.
Later when they're like fixing things up, I did like Daniel curled up on the floor with a book. I thought that was funny.
That image is used so often on Twitter. People love that image.
It's so on brand.
But I was noticing that it's like, it's this notebook that he has and it's bedazzled on the back. And I'm like, but why is it bedazzled?
He was bored. he bedazzled it. It's 2002. Everything was bedazzled.
I mean, I'm guessing the assumption is that it wasn't originally his notebook, that it is like from some Gwold place, and the Gwold bedazzled it, and he's using it, I guess. The
Gwold are out here with their bedazzling kits from Claire's.
Why not?
Putting glitter on things.
But yeah, so he was clutching his bedazzled notebook and sleeping against a Malp. Yeah, but that's a very popular image of him. But yeah, so I guess they get the ship fixed pretty quickly for the first time. Most of the time when they have to fix a ship, it's like the longest thing ever. No, I guess it was easy this time.
It was and a so really they nice set, the ship.
Yeah.
I don't know. It looked newer and shinier and cozier. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It was just like, I don't normally notice the set, but I noticed mm-hmm. the set.
They were flying on the ship for 10 to 11 days. I wish they had, like, shown us the setup in that larger back room of, like, how are the cots laid out? Like,
a little bit of, like, debris as the days go by, like, garbage kind of gathered in one place. And
like, maybe, like, a montage of what they're doing in terms of, like, Sam is always working on something. And probably Teal'c is always, like, monitoring the ship's systems at the like bridge controls or whatever, and Daniel's always reading, and then Jack is just like annoying people.
Jack is watching movies because he's stepping up his movie references.
But I would have liked like a 30-second montage of like what they were doing for 10 days, you know.
I agree, just like little, like they're working now, they're like throwing a ball around.
Like a hacky sack.
Yeah, or like doing something.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Playing some kind of board game.
Where did they get a board game? They brought it with them in anticipation of the trip?
Yeah. I mean, they knew it was going to take a long time.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Ah, well. So while they're traveling, the SGC is setting up an alpha site, which I'm pretty sure is the first time we've had mention of an alpha site, but we don't actually get to see it because we don't have the budget for it yet, I guess.
What's an alpha site?
Like an alternative site where if the SGC is compromised, you have a secondary base of operations on another planet.
Got it. So we don't have the budget for that yet.
Yeah. We'll see it eventually. I think in that alternate reality episode that we had in, like, was that season 2? They had an alpha site, but they called it the beta site.
What alternate reality? Which one? What happened?
The one where Jack and Sam kissed.
Yes! Leave it that one. Got it.
Yeah, that one. I'm pretty sure they called it the beta site on that one. So I'm like, envisioning, like, other realities, and they're like, this one's the Omega site, and
this was the Zeta site.
And so, what I don't understand, okay, so I have questions about, if you think that the whole world is going to be destroyed, and you're sending people through the Stargate to basically preserve human civilization, how do you choose who goes? Because, I mean, I understand choosing doctors and engineers and scientists so that you can be able to build and, you know, reform society, blah blah blah, but I'm wondering about family members. Like, we see Janet go through the Stargate, but what about her daughter? Are we presuming that everybody's leaving their family behind?
I don't know. This is like one of those like philosophical questions that stresses me the hell out, because like, there are so many, like family members are one thing, and then there are just so many members of society that, like, are deemed unimportant in an apocalypse.
Yeah. Like artists.
Like artists, like teachers, like caregivers. Like, just, you know, loved ones. They're, like, people that are just deemed unimportant because they don't produce and create. Right.
Yeah.
And do, like, you know, things that our capitalist society deems important. And it's...
Yeah.
I guess what I'm saying is everybody has value.
Yes.
I can think of like 10 people that don't have any value and could be left behind if the world was ending. But like, otherwise, everybody else has value.
Yeah, because I mean, I can see how as a military operation, they would be thinking like, okay, we need to send as many people that are the best of the best to go through.
Which also adds a whole other layer of why is the American military deciding who gets to go through? I mean, I know why.
Because they control the target.
Yeah. But like the American military is deciding, meaning like once we're done acknowledging that they've only sent American doctors and scientists and engineers through, like, what about the doctors in like Italy, Mauritania? Well, like,
I guess you could go. Well, I guess you could argue that there might be a lot of Russians going because they're supposed to be getting updated on everything that happens with the Stargate. So they may have sent, you know, teams of people over to go through.
But it's just limited. 193 nations on this planet.
Yeah.
Maybe more. Like, and two of them have the Stargate and everybody else can just deal with it.
Yeah.
Sorry, but Antigua, then, you're not going anywhere.
But then it's like, for my thing is like, okay, even if you were to send the best of the best, blah, 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 all of these people that are the best of the best that you're sending are probably all minimum 30 years old, if not older, and probably if they're not allowed to bring their families, then they're leaving behind their loved ones and spouses. And if you actually want to continue human civilization, that requires reproduction. And so, well, you need to be able to continue the society.
I just had a thought that the Americans running the Stargate are only sending a few Americans through because, one, they don't care about the rest of the planet, and two, yeah, or the rest of the country, really, and planet, and two, they've just spent the last 4 years hopping all over the galaxy and they know there's plenty of humans out there. They're just gonna go start breeding elsewhere.
I suppose, but at the same time, the U.S. military is so insular that I can't see them immediately jumping to that. I would think that they would want to rebuild the Earth.
No, they're going to go and build a military base and ruin whatever planet they're on with their militaristic ways. Mm-hmm. And then one of them is going to be like kind of horny, though. And then that's when colonialism happens, just on a galactic scale.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the plan. That was the long-term plan.
Yeah, because I mean, especially in terms of it being the U.S. military, we know that there are not very many women, like compared, especially in 2002, there are not that many women, and the ones that we've seen on base look like they're getting a little old for children, maybe, and so it's like realistically, you would not be having anybody able to reproduce over there. So you would have to bring families so that you could continue the generations.
No, we've seen this story before. There's no obligation to bring your spouse if you want to go start having kids.
Well, sure.
In a place you have occupied as a soldier in the military. Yeah. There is no obligation to have your wife there.
I'm also just thinking on a personal level, I'm thinking especially so with Janet, because we've seen her with Cassandra and we know Cassandra. I cannot see Janet agreeing to go through that Stargate without her daughter. Like, that's just not happening.
Maybe they gave her daughter to shut her up. But everybody's like, yeah, that's fine. I get to start over again. I hate my wife. This is 2002 after all.
But I don't know that I'd be able to do it. I don't know that I would be able to leave my family like that, you know?
I wouldn't. I know I wouldn't.
Like, leave my family behind to go live out the rest of my life with my colleagues?
Like, a nightmare.
Get real.
Oh my god.
Anyway, that's not the point of this episode.
Anyway. One thing that was super cute about this episode was when they do get there and they want to take their little rover out to like look around on the asteroid. And they're wearing spacesuits.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, it's funny how rare it is to see them in a spacesuit like that for all that they spend most of this show in space.
Yeah, I always found it like very ironic because Sam always wanted to be an astronaut when she grew up. And now she does something way cooler, but then they do still need to wear those suits sometimes.
But she didn't get to go this time.
Yeah. Although, I do have a nitpicky complaint about the suits.
Okay.
So, they had planned for Jack and Sam to do this EVA in the spacesuits, right?
Right.
And so they only brought the two suits with them. We know that they only brought two suits with them because later on, when Sam and Daniel needed something to protect them, they had to go in the escape pods because they didn't have any other suits.
Right.
Spacesuits come in sizes, and they're often tailored to a particular person. And we know this partly from other media representations, but also from the basis that when they were first going to attempt an all-woman spacewalk a few years ago, they didn't have enough small size suits for all the women on board. So we know that spacesuits have sizes, which means that if there was a spacesuit there for Sam, there's no way that massive Teal'c would have fit in that suit.
Unless both Sam and Jack got slightly bigger suits. So Teal'c is wearing Jack's and Jack is wearing Sam's.
But then the suits would be too small for them. Or were too big for them. Or, you know, like they wouldn't, like it would have been.
Maybe
like
they just didn't have properly sized suits for Sam. Wouldn't surprise me. Most places she'll bother. Just
stuck with a suit that's ill. But if you have a suit that's not properly sized to you, then it's a safety hazard.
Well, then don't be a woman. I don't know, man.
Yeah, I know.
It's like the sisterhood of the traveling pants. The pants are as big as they need them to be.
So we're yeah. Yeah. I feel like we only get away with this because this is a science fiction show. Yeah. If this was like a more heavily science-based show, then we would not get away with that at all.
Yeah, there would be questions.
Yeah. So back to the plot. They make it to Earth and to this asteroid, and they end up like hurtling towards it because the asteroid has a much stronger gravitational field than they were expecting. But they do make it into a crater of the asteroid like they wanted to. And Sam looks at the computer, you know, holographic, and is like, oh, the gravity is stronger because it's made of like 80% aqua. So that's fun. It's fun fact.
Yay!
Oh, man. Yeah, so it's just like, okay, well, now we have to completely rethink our plan because we were going to set off this bomb, but now if we set off the bomb, it will make even more of an impact than the asteroid on its own would. So then it becomes a whole thing. Meanwhile, back on Earth, they're like sending people through the Stargate, and NASA was able to see them hurtling towards the asteroid, but they couldn't see them enter the crater. So they think SG-1 is dead. And like Major Davis is really stressed out. And Walter looks so worried. He's like in the background, just like with this look of horror on his face. And I'm like, Walter, it's going to be okay.
I thought I had missed something. When they were like, they crashed. I'm like, they're fine. But they're fine. And then it goes to the next scene. I'm like, see, they're fine. What did I miss? And then I went back. But then I realized, no, it was just like a tension for the plot. But I legit thought I missed something because they looked so upset.
Yeah. Well, because, I mean, you can only see so much with our satellites. And,
yeah,
you know, they couldn't see the crater. So, yeah. I think at some point, I don't remember how it happened, but somehow Sam, like, hit her head on something. Oh, she was trying to fix something, and the crystals shorted out and electrocuted her, and she fell and hit her head on the ground. And so she has, like, a mild concussion. And I appreciate that Jack was, like, looking out for her, and he was like, okay, you're not going on the EVA. Like, Teal'c will go with me instead. So I'm like, okay, well, I'm really glad we're acknowledging that concussions are a thing. And that we should pay attention. Because I feel like in sometimes shows like this, like somebody hits their head and they should absolutely have a concussion, but then they act like nothing's wrong. Yeah. Now we're like, you know, acknowledging it. So like, okay, that's good. So Jack and Teal'c go set the bomb, but then like while they're gone, that's when Sam figures out that it's composed of Nakoda, so they need to not set off the bomb, and so Teal'c and Jack go back, and that's when we discover that the bomb has these like wires in it that are supposed to be color coded, but they're all yellow. And so when Jack needs to disarm it, he doesn't know which wires to snip because they're all yellow.
He made the right call and didn't snip the wrong one.
By chance. There was 100% luck. There was no strategizing involved.
The plot protected him.
Yes, absolutely. And so they're on their way back, and then they're going through this asteroid field. Is it an asteroid field? There's some kind of field that they're going through, and there's going to be debris.
Mm-hmm.
And so some small rocks fall onto the cargo ship and puncture the hull. And so that's when Sam and Daniel have to get into the escape pods because they don't have spacesuits. And so when Jack and Teal'c get back, they have to repair the holes so that Daniel and Sam can come back out.
Yay.
And when this was happening, like Jack and Teal'c were like on their way back, and Sam was trying to fix stuff, Jack kept asking for updates like every 15 seconds. And I'm like, Jack, she cannot update you and fix the ship at the same time.
But he loves her. So that makes it okay.
Because she has to stop what she's doing and pick up the radio every time he says something. And I'm like, Jack, sweetie.
Stop it.
Can you please calm down a little bit? So they're like trying to figure out how they're going to solve this problem. Meanwhile, I'm thinking about like long-term solutions. I'm just like daydreaming, like, okay, if they manage to save the day and the asteroid remains intact, could they conceivably set up a mining operation on this asteroid and get Nakuta out of it? I don't know.
We'll never know now.
I mean, they could conceivably, right? Because, I mean, they have a cargo ship. Well, I guess they have to fix it. But they could repair the cargo ship.
Just wonder if the effort's worth it for them.
I guess it also depends how fast the asteroid is traveling. Because it might get out of range of, like, reasonable distance from Earth somewhat quickly.
Yeah, that's true.
But I mean, I think they would have like at least a good month to try to mine it for some Nakuta.
But I guess depending on how fast it's moving, they would have to move with it and then take the proportionate amount of time to come back. And
I think it would just be whether or not the cargo ship had like the power supply that would last long enough, and they had like enough materials to
do. Which then goes back to the idea then of like, is this even worth it?
Yeah, probably not. Something to think about, though. If they could just tow it into orbit, now there's an idea.
Now that's a lot of junior founding astrologists you gotta arrest.
Well, I mean, if it's in orbit, then it's not necessarily a problem, because then you would just assume that, okay, this stray asteroid came into our solar system, but it wasn't strong enough to go through our orbit. It got caught by Earth's orbit. You know, I feel like that's reasonable.
It's reasonable, but the conspiracy theorists?
Well, sure, but there's conspiracy theorists about everything, so.
Then don't make it easy for them.
But we want the Nakuta.
I'm just being difficult.
Anyway, so they managed to disarm the bomb. And they're trying to figure out what to do. And Daniel comes up with the idea to have the hyperspace bubble extend around the entire asteroid and transport it through Earth. Well, I guess kind of like Daniel starts the idea rolling and then Sam kind of finishes his thought. And so they actually manage to do that. And so they get the asteroid all the way through the Earth. And then I guess that used up all the power the cargo ship has had. Because now they can't go back home. Oh, well. Wow. I guess they're just going to die on the asteroid.
LOL, JK.
Meanwhile, on Earth, Hammond is like, well, the asteroid was there and then it disappeared. I'm like, but were they not able to see that it was suddenly on the opposite side of the planet? You know? And like make conclusions about that. But anyway, he was just like, I'm confident that SG-1 had something to do with it. Like, yeah. He has confidence in his kids.
Papa Hammond.
Yeah. And so we do finally have a Tok'ra come and save them and take them back to Earth. And Jack is really sassy. And I'm like, Jack, can you not just like say thank you for once? I guess not.
Nah.
And I was wondering if they took the bomb back with them or not. Because I'm sure that bomb cost a lot of money. They said it was basically the biggest bomb that anybody had ever made on Earth. I'm like, I bet that was expensive.
Well, people should not be trusted with this level of destruction.
No. So SG-1 saved the day once again.
Woo!
I guess this can go on my count of times that SG-1 has saved the planet.
Yes. Yes, definitely. Because this, I think, was like the most dire straits I think has ever been in. Yeah. So, yes.
Yeah. I was really torn with this episode. I kind of felt like it was one like a great, you know, one of the one-off episodes where it's like Adventure of the Week. But at the same time, I feel like it was less exciting than some of the others have been.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I think like it was nice in that we had the whole team together and they weren't being pulled apart by like the character of the week and they were like really working on something together. I think was really nice. I think it had like the surprisingly dark aspect of how do you prepare for the end of the world on the Earth side of things.
Yeah.
But besides that, there's not a ton happening in this episode. They have to go get a ship, drive back and blow up the asteroid, and then they do that. Yeah. So
I guess there's not a lot of like character progression. Like for them having spent 10 to 11 days stuck on this ship together, mm-hmm. we don't get a lot of time with them, like having conversations.
Right.
So I think maybe that's what I was missing. Like with the whole like wanting a montage type thing, something showing like the team bonding during this time.
Yeah, something that maybe like could have come up as a joke down the line, kind of tied back to it, makes it, even if it doesn't change the overall structure of the episode and doesn't like throw a wrench in their plans.
Yeah.
Just livens it up a bit.
Yeah. Because I think we discussed this before about how like action heavy episodes that have no like in-depth character moments just tend to fall a little flat.
Yeah. They do, because it's like there's only so much action I can take before I realize that like you don't give me something to care about. I just won't care about it at all.
Right. Yeah. But we got lots of character moments in the next episode.
Actually, for all that Jack was actually driving me insane in the next episode, really liked it.
I liked some of it and then I didn't like some of it. So this is going into episode The Warrior, which Chris Judge wrote. So that's pretty cool.
I mean, that's why Teal'c has something to do. Because I like...
Right.
One of my thoughts of the episode overall was Teal'c doesn't have much to do anymore.
Yeah.
And I guess that not all of them need like a driving end goal purpose like they had right in the beginning. But I think we all kind of forget that he's not just like a fourth human working for the SGC. Like he does come from another planet. He has a whole other culture identity, and that almost never gets talked about anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So having an episode that's centered on that so much.
Yes.
Kind of made me miss that side of things.
I agree. And I mean, we'll see more of this kind of stuff going forward because he continues to work towards a Frigia Foundation.
Yay.
So we will definitely see more of that. But I do feel like this brought out a side of him that I don't like. So just for like some bullet points. There's a group of Free Jaffa on this planet called Kelma, I think. And there is this Jaffa named Kitano who is leading them, and he's like training them in this new blend of martial arts and getting them to go on missions. But he's like it's very toxic because he doesn't seem to care when they die. And so it's this big whole thing, and Teal'c and Braytag are both like, this guy's the second coming basically, and he's gonna like lead our people into freedom, blah blah blah. My issue with it is that when Teal'c goes into these situations with Jaffa, he gets so blinded by his hope for the future that he can't see what's right in front of him.
Yeah.
And it's almost like he becomes a different person, because when he's with SG-1, he is very tactical and intelligent, and he is good in stressful situations. He not only follows orders, but he leads well when he needs to. Mm-hmm. But when he's with the Jaffa, it's like he's so happy to be among his own people, which is great, but he loses sight of the big picture, or like he thinks he sees the big picture, but he's missing it. And it's like he wants this one thing so bad that he's not willing to see the faults in it.
I agree that he becomes somebody different when he's with the Jaffa. I disagree in that I don't think that's surprising or poor mm-hmm. writing or just like a nonsense choice for a character. Mm-hmm. Because, and like, how many of us turn into somebody else when we're around our high school friends?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, we just become somebody else. And I think when he's with the SGC, he is the odd one out. He's the alien on Earth, mm-hmm. helping them in their situations, in situations that are foreign to both him and them, mm-hmm. like out in the galaxy. He has a certain mindset when he's with the SGC. But when he's with his own people, it's like the SGC part never happened.
Yeah.
Other than the, you know, deprogramming from working for the goal. But like, it's like that becomes his priority, and it sort of shows that maybe that's always his priority. Mm-hmm. But there's no way to vocalize that with the SGC, because like, they're nice people, but they don't really care. Like, it doesn't mm-hmm. affect them personally, but it does affect him personally all the time, and especially around his own people. So I think he just lets that side of himself show. And I think he does kind of miss the point a couple of times mm-hmm. in his optimism, but I don't think that decision doesn't track. I think it absolutely makes sense that he would do that.
Yeah. Well, it's just like when he's with them, he sees himself as one of the Jaffa and not one of the SGC as well, which Jack makes a point of when he's saying, you know, O'Neill, you might have a problem with this alliance because of what Kitano does. And Jack points out, why are you saying you? It should be like we as the SGC, because you're part of us.
Right.
And so like Teal'c is othering himself, you know, from the SGC. But I mean, I feel like this just also goes back to other episodes that we've seen Teal'c, like when he went back to find his wife and his son, and he found out that she was married to somebody else. He was like calling her woman and kind of like talking that down to like her. And so I don't know, I just feel like every time we've seen him with other Jaffa, he just has a slightly different personality.
Yeah.
That becomes slightly problematic. And like, I don't know. Because it's like, I want him to be with his people and be happy, and he seems really happy, but then he also just seems not himself. Or maybe it's just that he's not himself when he's at the SGC.
I think that's probably more likely. Like, the stuff like woman and all that, I didn't like. And I think that was poor writing. But in this case, I feel like it really does show that he's not himself when he's at the SGC, because he's very like tactical and very quiet, like you said. Mm-hmm. And like, he's a good leader and he's a good friend and all of that, but there is this entire side of his personality that gets completely erased by the SGC. Even like Jack being like, what do you mean you and not we? I'm like, well, he's part of your team because in the beginning it kind of furthered mutual ends.
Yeah.
Those ends have been met.
Yeah.
Like Apophis isn't a problem. Sheree is dead. Like those initial ends that brought him to the team have been met. Now there's larger threats out there. Yes. So he's going to stick with the team because that makes sense. But he also has like interests of his own and a purpose of his own. And he's going to take more time for that.
I think there does come a point in a later season where Teal'c is wrestling with the idea of, you know, in order to do the most good for the Jaffa, should I completely leave the SGC and go join them as a leader kind of thing?
Yeah.
So that's kind of an idea that he wrestles with a bit more pointedly later. But it's just, I don't know. It's so hard to figure out how much of it is like to be expected or out of character.
I don't know.
I mean, I guess certainly Chris Judge didn't find it to be out of character for him, considering that he wrote it for the character he's.
Yeah, like I would be a little more lenient here than I would in like the woman episode, just because he did have something to do with this. So,
I mean, maybe that was something that he specifically wanted to address, was this kind of dual nature of Teal'c's personality. And him having to confront that, you know. But yeah, I mean, I guess my bigger complaint is not so much the personality as it is that it's kind of like love makes you blind type situation where he loves his Jaffa so much and he wants it to succeed so much that he is blind to what Katana was really doing. And I mean, that's true of all the Jaffa, not just Teal'c. That's true of every single Jaffa that's on that planet. And and so then it's like Jack immediately suspects something, but he's the white guy.
It's a bad look.
Yeah. And it's like he ends up being right, of course, but
it's also a bad look.
He's also kind of an a-hole on the way.
This is just kind of goes to show having a more diverse cast. Avoids this being a bad look.
Yeah.
Because like then it can be what it is, which is we don't trust this individual and not the white man decided that so and so was not trustworthy.
Yeah. I mean I think Jack kind of does have Jack has a history of not putting a lot of effort into learning other people's culture and language, but not always to this point of where he's just like he just straight up says he doesn't care.
Charming.
It's like I don't expect Jack to care remotely on the same level as Daniel
for because it's Daniel's knowing area of interest.
Yeah, for like knowing what Tekmatek and Tekmate mean. Like obviously I'm not expecting Jack to just know that, but to just actually say that he doesn't care. That's very problematic, white man of you, Jack.
Also, what was the... I wrote not Jack being a white man about other people's customs, but I don't remember what it was. It was something to do with the fighting. Oh, like, when they were like, when they were practicing and they were actually hitting each other.
Yeah.
And he was intervening and somebody's like, they have symbiotes. Like, they're going to be fine.
Well, I think Jack was worried about them like actually killing each other, which is fair.
It's fair, but... they didn't just start doing this today.
Mm-hmm. Well, and so if we're going to talk, like, talking about this community as a whole, another thing I didn't understand is how there are kind of these, like, giant decorative staffs posted throughout, and then some people are carrying some of them, that have the insignia of all the various gold that they used to work for.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I don't understand that. Why are you representing the symbols of your enemy all throughout your camp?
As a reminder, maybe.
Do they need a reminder?
I don't know. You have right in front of you like a...
I mean, they like all literally just became free within the last year, presumably. Do you need a reminder of who your enemy is at that point? you know.
Yeah, that no, that does seem very Western civilization.
Because it just makes it seem like even though they're all free Jaffa, that they're kind of maybe still living in cliques, like the people.
It could be. That's also very possible.
Who used to work for Apophis kind of stick together, and the people who used to work for, you know. But
yeah, maybe that could be it. Honestly, it might not even be like clicky. It might just be like mutual experience drew them together.
Yeah, those are the ones that they knew coming in.
Like they knew them. They kind of knew what that goal was like. So it's just easier.
I would just think that if you're trying to overthrow the Gua'uld, why would you have their insignia all over the place still? Doesn't make sense.
For our benefit.
Well, how does that benefit us?
I don't know. Because it looks visually interesting.
I mean, the staffs were really pretty. They were really nicely decorated.
The set deck people are like, we designed these staffs and we are going to use them.
Yeah, I mean, they were nice looking, and a lot of like the tents also, some of them had printed designs that had insignia on it too. And I'm like, I mean, it's pretty, but
would the tents be left over and they just brought it with them?
The tents, I understand. Like if they're just they grabbed a bunch of stuff while they were, you know, fleeing. They grabbed what they could, if it has insignia, whatever. But the staffs are like purposefully placed. They're not doing anything. You know, they're not holding anything up. They're just there. So, I don't know.
I don't know.
And then one funny comment I had was that, so the symbol for Imhotep is like really pointy, and like Kitano has like the first prime marker that's like 3D. And it's really like sharp and pointy looking. And I'm like, I wonder if his clothes catch on that.
Maybe. I went down a bit of a timeline rabbit hole with Imhotep.
Oh, yeah.
Have we heard him mentioned before?
No.
No. So that proves my point. Because I was like, I don't think we have, but okay. No. So they said that and I looked up because... If you've watched The Mummy, like I have, then that name means something to you.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's the guy from The Mummy. I don't know what you're talking about. And then they start giving us like context for who Imhotep was. And then I looked at the timeline and I'm like, if this was written in late 2001 or mid 2001, I wonder if they're banking off of The Mummy Returns.
Maybe.
So then I thought they were, these two were distributed by the same company, but they weren't. But, that would have really sold it for me, but just something to think about. Is this like, you know, ancient Egypt kind of became popular because, like, again, because of those movies, like everybody kind of had a phase. So they're like, let's bank on that. And they just made Imhotep the like.
Yeah. I mean, I could see that in terms of being like, they needed to have a random Gua'uld. And so why not pull a name that's familiar to people?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, ultimately, it doesn't really matter who it was.
Could have been, like, Frank.
Literally anybody, yeah.
So, yeah, that was my thought.
Yeah. So, in any case, they're, like, getting to know all of these Jaffa, and they, like, brought them supplies, and so they're showing them how to use the guns, even though, like, the Jaffa don't consider them true weapons. I did appreciate how Sam got to be the one to do the demonstration because, like, Kitano was being super sexist. He was like, a woman.
Well.
Actually, he used the word female, which is even more telling.
Which is a red flag.
Right? You just know he'd be one of those guys on Twitter.
He runs a couple of threads on Reddit. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I do know what you mean. And I was also thinking about how, like, with these kind of episodes, like, they put out a casting call, like, for all bodybuilders in Vancouver. Come and be extras on the show, because it's, like, all these really buff guys. And, like, most of them don't even have armor. And I'm like, I mean, it's a nice visual, but where's their armor?
They're just working out, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And so, like, Kitano is sending all of these Jaffa through on these crazy missions, and it seems like the majority of the people who go on these missions get killed. Sometimes they get lucky, but there's one where it's like very clearly a suicide mission, and the guys who go through the Stargate are not wearing armor. And I'm like, oh, so
they're really not planning on coming back.
Well, no, but still, like, give them a fighting chance at least.
But I'm saying they're not planning on coming back.
Yeah, but if their goal is to get as far as possible into Nirti's lair or whatever in order to set off this bomb, then they need to be well outfitted to get as far as possible.
This was also the point where I made the note that they're going on a suicide mission to blow something up. Is this where the suicide bombers are creeping in?
Yeah, the whole like 9/11 influence.
Yeah, I'm like, it hasn't started.
Yeah, I mean, because it definitely is like, I mean, I wouldn't say it's painting Kitano as a terrorist necessarily, but
it's not. But like the idea of like a quote unquote religious,
yes,
zealot,
yes,
blowing something up mm-hmm. for the sake of a cause.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe this would have been the plot anyway.
Right.
In like a 9/11 free April 2002. But
in like a leader who teaches his underlings to self-sacrifice without being willing to do that himself.
Yeah, like a leader who views his underlings as expendable, like mm-hmm. all that kind of stuff. I'm wondering if that would have been the story anyway.
Yeah. But I don't know. That's impossible to say. But yes, I mean, the SG-1 goes on one mission with Kitano, and he puts on this whole show of like how he can convince these Jaffa that work for Nirti to come with them instead of fighting them. And like Sam makes a really good point of like, how do you know that these guys are going to be loyal to the Free Jaffa cause? Like, they just learned about it. You know?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you basically went up to them and put a gun to their head and said, you know, join us or die, essentially. I mean, that's what it came down to, because it was like, you know, either you join us or we're going to fight you, and you're probably going to die in the firefight. So how do you know that those people who come with you are actually going to stay true to your cause? Maybe one or two of them will slip out and go back to Nirti and report your location. You know?
You don't know. You have no way of knowing that.
Yeah, so I think that, yeah, Sam made that point, and I'm like, yeah, how do you know you don't have spies? And their response was just like, oh, we all believe in our cause. But I'm like, okay, but how well do you know these people? Because everybody's coming from a different system lord, right?
Yeah.
So it's not like you personally know every single Jaffa and what's in their heart of hearts. So, yeah.
It's hard to say.
Yeah. But, I mean, Kitano, he does know how to put on a show. He's very charismatic. He gives a good speech. And so, yeah, I mean, everyone's just following him. And... But yeah, you're right. I don't know if I really like the idea that it's the white people from Earth who are pointing out what's wrong with this.
But that's not that I dislike our cast. I love our cast, but that's the problem when your cast is three white people.
Yeah.
Is that inevitably if one of them wants to point that out, then that's what happens.
And I mean, not all of the Jaffa are people of color anyway. Right. Like a lot of them are white. But it's still another culture.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's the principle of the thing.
Yeah. And so it kind of comes down to this final mission that Kitano asks Teal'c to go on. He has information that Yu has become weak after he was stabbed by Osiris. And he says that he was healed by a sarcophagus, but that he's still weak. And I'm like, your definition of weak is questionable.
The math isn't mathing, Kitano.
Yeah. Like, either sarcophagus heals you or it doesn't. And, like, what would that have to do with your resources? Like, I mean, he got stabbed, but that didn't lessen the number of Jaffa he has. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And also, you, we know from the previous episodes, has been around for like 10,000 years. He is not going to be somebody easy to beat. This guy has been around the block and back. He knows strategy.
This whole ending felt so abrupt.
Yeah, it was.
Because there was a huge buildup to like this Jaffa cause. And then they're like, you is weak. Go kill him. And then Teal'c like, cool. And then the next thing we see of Teal'c, he's like beaten up.
Yeah.
And then he comes back and he's like, you betrayed us. And then like, it all unravels. So like, it was getting to the point where he was in Yu's lair. Mm-hmm. Where I was like, oh, that's weird. This is a two-parter. It's weird that Chelsea didn't note it that way. Because I'm like, there's absolutely no way that this is going to resolve in like 5 minutes or less. And it does.
Yeah, it was very abrupt.
So weird.
And so we got this scene with Yu, and I feel like it really backed up my idea that of all the system lords, Yu is the most reasonable one. Because he really does like talk to Teal'c in a pretty gentle way, and he's like, listen, you've been betrayed by Kitano. He's not who you think he is. There is no mutiny upon my ship. Everything's fine over here. I'm not weak. You're being played. I'm gonna let you live and send you back. And basically, you'll have, you know, a 20-minute head start before I come and attack the planet. And I'm like, wow.
1, 2, 3. He's like covering his eyes.
Yeah. And I'm like, see, I know Yu is a villain, but he is the most reasonable villain on this show. I'm like, you know, he's not like
110% never let it be said evil. That Yu doesn't have a sense of humor.
But I feel like it's kind of like he wants to kill all of these free Jaffa, obviously. But I think part of him is also just offended by Imhotep's plan and just specifically wants Imhotep to lose. Because he's like, this bitch had the audacity to pose as a Jaffa.
And so I don't care if you win, I want Imhotep to lose.
Exactly. That's kind of what I'm thinking. And so, yeah, I mean, luckily for us, he lets Teal'c live. He very easily could have killed Teal'c, obviously. And so, yeah, Teal'c comes back and he challenges Kitano to Jomaseku, which is the like, leadership, the leadership right kind of duel to the death. And so they fight, and luckily Teal'c is able to win, and then he proves that Kitano is actually Imhotep and he's not a Jaffa. And everyone's like, look, gasp.
How could we not have seen that one coming?
Yeah. And well, it's like, you know, Jack and Sam are just like not surprised at all.
I didn't say that, to be fair.
Well, I mean, I feel like Kitano was acting kind of shady the whole time. So it's
knew he was shady.
Yeah.
But not that shady.
Right. I think my suspicion would have been like suspecting that he was still working for Imhotep kind of thing, but not that he was actually Imhotep himself.
Yeah.
I mean, he really committed to the bit. He got the first prime marking on his forehead and everything.
He went to Space Claire's and bought a little accessory.
It makes me wonder, like, which one of his own Jaffa did he get to put on his head? Honestly, he probably would have had to get one of his own people to put that on his head and then probably killed that person because then they would know.
Yep.
You know? So
it's okay, it's all worth it for whatever nonsense cause he has going on,
I guess. But it's just so funny how, like, at the beginning of that episode, like, Daniel is just like, oh yeah, he's a nobody. He literally says he's from a backwater planet, and I'm like, wow.
Well, Daniel, it's funny you should say that.
So I mean, I guess he was desperate. He's like, well, you know, a lot of system lords are dying, and the Gwold, like Bastet and Kali and Olokun are coming up. Maybe I can come up too, you know?
Yeah.
Why not? And I did notice when they were having their Jomoseku fight that it was like partially in slow motion. And I feel like we don't normally see that.
It's the time, is a time period. It's like trendy in editing. That's why.
But I still think it's not like something we see very often in Stargate. So
because they probably took one look at this and went, eh, let's not do that.
Oh, yeah. But yeah, I don't know. This episode had a lot to think about for sure.
I liked it, but
yeah.
It's not perfect. There's definitely problematic elements.
Yeah.
I don't think it holds up for... Actually, that's not true. It does hold up for a modern audience, but there's elements to it where I'm like, this was being made today. It would have been made differently.
Differently, yeah. Yeah, considering the time at which it was made, I get it.
And also, like, it's not that it doesn't hold up. Like, it doesn't hold up to, like, mild scrutiny.
Mm-hmm.
Because anything that we think of as problematic is, like, built into the DNA of the show.
Yeah.
But so it's not like problematic to this episode specifically.
Yeah.
That said, those problematic elements kind of came out to play a little bit.
Yeah.
First episode was fine.
Yeah.
Actually, first episode was fine as presented, but is deeply problematic if you think about the implications of the US military handling evacuation for the entire planet.
I mean, to be fair, they told us very little. So we don't actually know who they chose. Yeah,
that's what I mean. It's like fine as presented.
Mm-hmm.
Just don't think about it too hard.
I mean, they could have very possibly gotten thousands of people off because they had 10 days to be sending people through the Stargate.
Thousands of people. There's billions on this planet.
Well, sure, but, like, logistically, you can't get
right. So the problematic element of the U.S. being logistically in charge is they would put their shittiest person ahead of the best person in any other country.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I think also part of the problem is if you were to tell the entire world, you would have to tell the whole world about the Stargate program, which would be very complicated and tough to explain in a short amount of time. Where I mean, they do have 10 days, but like, that's not a lot of time for telling the rest of the world about the Stargate program specifically so that they can send their best people to another planet to not die. You know what I mean? Like, that's a lot of planning.
I get what you're saying. I just, like, my problem goes deeper where it's like, logistically, I know why the SGC has the Stargate, but like that goes into the larger problem of this American military took an Egyptian artifact and went, we own this now and we decide how it's used.
Yeah.
And that in it, like the core of the show is problematic if you think about it that way. So that's my issue with the evacuation of it is it's like, other than the fact that you muscled in there and took this artifact, what gives you the right to run it?
Yeah.
But that is obviously not something specific to this episode. That's just...
Yeah. I guess from the viewpoint of the show as a whole, the way you kind of get around the morality of that is that you can argue that the Stargate is not an Egyptian artifact that they stole because it never belonged to the Egyptians because it's... But then Wold brought it.
Doesn't belong to the Americans either, other than the fact that they took it out of one country and set it up in their own. This is ours.
No, absolutely. It does not belong to the U.S. at all. It's just they're the ones who happen to have it.
Because they stole it.
I mean, yeah, basically.
Anyway.
So, yeah, I mean.
Anyway.
I don't think that's really something that...
I don't think that's,
like, worth pursuing, really.
No, it's not. It's just, like, thinking about who gets the right to control the evacuation of 6 billion people.
Yeah.
Why is it this one man from Texas who lives in Cheyenne Mountain? Like...
Well, to be fair, it's probably people in the Pentagon who are deciding...
Why is it the Pentagon, then? But that's, like... so far past the level at which this show is asking you to engage with the material that it's just not worth commenting on beyond the like 40 minutes we spent on it this week.
Well, and another reason why they would probably limit it to American personnel is because on the off chance that SG-1 saves the day and they don't actually have to permanently evacuate to this other site, then if they had told the whole world about the Stargate program in order to get people to evacuate, then they now have to deal with the whole world knowing about the Stargate program when they're still alive.
No, I understand that.
Yeah.
But then I'm kind of like, why doesn't the whole world deserve to know about the Stargate program?
That's a very valid question to ask.
Like, why do the two most volatile militaries in the world have the right to know nobody else does?
Because then the U.S. wouldn't be in control anymore. And they don't want to give up control. So.
And we can't have that. They're going to come for me.
With the military?
Yeah. Anyway, let's wrap this up.
We got rid of another Goa'uld. But I feel like killing Imhotep is not as impressive as, like, killing Kronos and Apophis and
you know.
Just like, oh, that guy. Okay. We're gonna add him to the list, I guess. Oh, I saw your note about how the Tekmatek seems to change meaning depending on context. And it's like, it's explained at the beginning that it's like a greeting, like a really respectable greeting. But I feel like when they're sparring later and Jack intervenes, I think the guy yells Tekmatek at him.
That's what prompted me to write this down. I thought it was like
a greeting.
Like a greeting.
Yeah.
But then he's like sticking his pointy thing in Jack's face and going Tekmatek. I'm like, was I wrong?
I think you heard it right. I think that was a mistake in the script. Because that we just learned, like, we specifically, very, very specifically learned that Tekmatek is a greeting, as well as Tekmate. And then it was used as not a greeting.
The writers forgot.
I don't know. It was very clumsy. Anything else about these two episodes we want to cover?
I got nothing.
Okay, so next week we will be talking about season 5, episodes 19 and 20, Menace and the Sentinel. We are getting so close to the end.
I know, it's surprising.
Ooh-wee. And we'll be doing, when we finish season 5, we'll be doing a seasons 4 and 5 like overview analysis episode. So that'll be coming up soon. Okay, so for next week, are you ready to hear your next quote and guess who said it and why?
Yes.
Why don't you kiss her?
What I want is for this to be Daniel talking to Jack about Sam. That's what I want. What is more likely is one of the team members, probably Sam, is talking to Daniel about the woman of the week.
Okay. But
let the record show what I want is something else.
Okay. Well, we'll find out next week if you're right. That's it for today. If you enjoy listening to our podcast, we would love for you to rate us 5 stars wherever you can. If you want to talk to us about Stargate, you can currently find us on our podcast Twitter and Tumblr page at Wormhole Waffles. And you can find me on Twitter and Tumblr at Chelsea Fairless. Arzu, how about you?
I am on Twitter at ArzuAmin. I'm on Blue Sky at ArzuAmin.bluesky.social. I'm at ArzuD2 everywhere else. So Instagram, Threads, Tumblr. As a network, we are on Twitter at Geeky_Waffle. We are The Geeky Waffle on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and Tumblr. We're The Geeky Waffle on YouTube. We are at TheGeekyWaffle.com. And we are on Patreon, patreon.com/TheGeekyWaffle.
Thanks for joining us today, and we'll see you on the other side of the event horizon.